words. Really good.
Got it.
We'll still give everybody a couple minutes here.
Oh, Linda, while you're there, do you mind shutting the door?
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
The time about right clock.
Yeah, pretty right.
Okay. Give everybody another minute or so. Running around, get your cup of coffee.
What?
Running around, get your cup of coffee. Straighten out your pajamas. Hey Jim.
Hey Jerry. Mark.
Good to see you.
See you guys. Hello there.
Hello.
Okay, it looks like people are a little bit slow this morning, but we're going to start anyway. Thanks, Margo. Okay. A couple of deep breaths. Kind of soften, get yourself grounded. Think of all the thousands of beings on planet Earth right now who are doing work like this in this moment. Stretching, opening, softening. And each one of you, each one of us, is contributing to the uniqueness of that message. And that healing. The light of God surrounds us. The love of God enfolds us. The power of God protects us. And the presence of God watches over us. Wherever we are, God is, and all is well. Good morning. We ended last week on the idea, well, not the idea so much, but the experience of free will. And it's a many faceted thing. Certainly we are free to choose anything you want to choose. You can choose fear, you can choose hatred, you can choose revenge, you can choose love, you can choose peace, you can choose joy. The ultimate freedom, however, and this just came to me as I was working on our reflection last week, the ultimate freedom is being able to choose unconditional love. As that in that's the freest we, now again, this is my interpretation, that's the freest we can be. Anything other than choosing unconditional love is limitation in some way or another. So it might seem a little bit contradictory, and it is on an intellectual sense, Because the intellect wants to say, well, I can choose anything I wanted. Yeah, and you can. But to choose unconditional love is also to choose absolute and total freedom. And then I just have to sit and wonder how often during a day do I choose that? How often during a day am I aware of that choice? That absolute and total freedom is the choice of unconditional love. So I'd like to make that our possibility and our theme this morning. We might keep coming back to that one. So we are continuing to use the Book of Innocence. And we are on page 14. Here's the way the book puts it, or the way the guides put it, kind of middle of the page on page 14. To understand the self as in the employ of the divine, the self as an employ, in other words, what's dominant here? And the dominant energy is the energy of the divine. The self is the servant of the divine. Interesting, that's what Ram Dass means, servant of God. To understand the self as in the employ of the divine is to allow the will to be utilized in a high way, or perhaps even in the highest way. When I realize that my small self, my personality, my ego consciousness is the servant of the divine consciousness, that's when I choose unconditional love, because I can't choose anything else. If God is love, then that's what I'm choosing. I can choose anything I want to choose, but anything other than that is choosing limitation. I'm very grateful that, those words or that idea came to me when I was putting this together last Sunday, because I don't think I ever realized that or put that in words. Not as a physical definition so much, but as an internal realization. Total freedom is the choice of unconditional love. And I always have that ability, no matter what's going on in the world outside of me, and no matter what my judgments might be, no matter what my feelings might be, I can still choose that. Now, choosing unconditional love doesn't mean that my feelings are necessarily going to change right away. I still might hate your guts in terms of my personality and your personality. That's not a conscious choice that I make. But I can make a conscious choice to feed that one or to not feed it. Does it open my heart or does it close my heart? I can feed my anger. I can feed my fear. I can feed my confusion if I choose to do that. However, I also need to realize that I'm choosing limitation when I do that. Not bad, not wrong, not sinful, but choosing limitation over unlimitedness, unconditional love, freedom, total freedom. Jim.
I'm just wondering, Jerry. It just came to me as you were sharing that. Does my choice of unconditional love, is there a correlation or a connection with attachment? So I'm choosing unconditional love. And as you said, it's freedom. But if I'm attached to anger or this or that, then The unconditional love isn't going to be an open portal.
Unconditional love is just what it says. It's unconditional. And if I have, or if I'm holding on to, it'd be like saying, well, I invite all beings to be in the light except for you. Okay. It doesn't work. As soon as I make an exception, as soon as I make a judgment, as soon as I feed my anger or my fear or my judgment, it stops working. It becomes conditional love, which is not love at all. So I'm not sure whether that answers your question or not.
It does. Yeah, I know what you said.
We kind of ruins in a while we say, oh, I love you unconditionally. Oops. All right. But I'm still holding on to this one. So to fit that into the whole idea of attachment, unconditional love is unattached
Yes.
to any labels.
Yes.
Jan, we
Yeah.
aren't going to let you off the bus.
Well, and again, to keep it really simple. Keep it really simple. Does what I'm thinking right now, or what I'm planning right now, or what I am connected with right now, does it open my heart or does it close my heart? If it opens my heart, it is unconditional. If it closes it, then I'm making a judgment, or I'm fearful, or I'm angry, or I'm hurtful, or whatever might happen. Does it open? If it opens my heart, there's no exception to that. Is it? Well, it partially opens my heart.
See, that's me, Jerry. You know what? See, I rationalize with that. You know what? So I use that. Well, hey, it could
Can I hold on to this just a little bit? Because I still think you're an SOV.
I think I have everybody included.
Yeah,
Somebody shows up.
I flip on the news, all right? You know, yep, I almost cleaned up the room, right? Except for that little corner over there where the mouse lives. Yeah, Russell.
Your unconditional love and your daily experiences, I think the way I would probably handle that is when you encounter somebody, you look at them first as spirit, and then from there, you deal with whatever it is you have to deal with that person. But when you first recognize them as spirit, it will temper or alter whatever you might do in that interaction. Does that make sense?
Sure.
But I mean, you can't, you know, there's people in my family that are going, oh man. And what do you do, you know? But, you know, I can still view them as spirit and love them on whatever level I can love them on, but you're not living in my house, you know?
You still stay over there, somebody.
That's still
That
make an effort anyway.
that's so key, Russell, because I'm thinking like, okay, if I connect to spirit first, as opposed to the ego,
Yeah.
you know, because it then I'm like, now I'm messed up because I'm dealing with the ego, but I gotta get the spirit. If I get the spirit first, here's that other stuff coming in. But I already went to spirit first.
Because when we're talking about unconditional love, we're not talking about the personality and the ego consciousness. We're talking about spirit, your soul, your being. Right? Now, I do believe that there will come a time, maybe even this lifetime, when I will be able to love your personality and your ego unconditionally. I mean, that's going to have to come from my own heart, my own soul. It's not coming from my ego or my personality. See, my ego and my personality, it'd be like, let's suppose you have a little baby, newborn. And this little baby doesn't have yet, doesn't have an ego yet, doesn't have a separate consciousness yet. And so our ability to love that little being and to allow that little being to love us is a fairly open door. And then what happens after about 6 months or so, what used to be a non-attachment, I had changed the diaper, I ran out of Pablum, or I need some more Pampers or whatever it happens to be. After about 6 months or so, there's a little bit of rubbing going on here.
Yes.
Okay. A little bit of friction. And what I begin, now most of us don't realize this, but what I begin to realize is this little being is forming an identity of his or her own. It's forming their own ego consciousness and their own personality. So much of which isn't a conscious choice, but it's there. And so by the time this little being becomes 2 or 3 years old, I mean, what's the favorite word of a 2-year-old?
No.
No. Guess where that comes from? It's my need to affirm my separateness from you. And as long as I am doing that, I'm going to be living in my personality and my ego consciousness on both sides of the picture. So what we're suggesting here is not, as I said, I do believe there will come a time when I will be so clear in my being that I am unattached to my personality and my ego consciousness. It's still there. It's my disguise or my mask or my the role I'm playing. It's still there, but it's not who I am. And since I know it is not who I am, I know it's not who you are either. In other words, I meet Donald on the street someday and I say, "Wow, nice disguise. Had me fooled." So yes, I do believe what you're saying is absolutely true, and I do believe there will come a time. Actually, it's written up in the Holy Spirit's interpretation of the New Testament, if you're familiar with that book, which is sort of the Gospels according to the Course in Miracles. But there, in the book of Mark, which is the biographical one in that Bible. One of the scenes is Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. You might recall, on a literal level, this is the night before Jesus was going to be crucified, arrested, and crucified. And he went into the garden to pray. And he told his apostles to pray with him. He invited Peter, James, and John to be part of that because those are the three that he was closest to. And he invited them to be part of the picture. He said, "Please, I'm going to go down further into the olive grove. I want you to stay here and pray with me." So they all agreed to do that, and they fell asleep. And he came back, and he saw them asleep. Now, in the written gospels, it's sort of, he sort of rebukes them a little bit. "Could you not watch 1 hour with me?" In the Holy Spirit's interpretation, he doesn't say anything to him. You can just tell he's disappointed. And he goes back to the private place, comes back in there, sleep again. Does that 3 times. Doesn't say anything in condemnation or judgment. But when he comes back the third time and he says to himself or to his apostle, "It's enough. Let's go." It says, and I'm paraphrasing here, "At that point, there was no more Jesus." In other words, he was no longer connected at all to his personality or his ego consciousness. It was still there, but there was no attachment to that, no identification to it. And so I do believe that it's possible for us to reach that state of consciousness, that we are no longer identified with or connected with my ego or my personality. It's just the clothes I happen to be wearing at this moment. And I think what we're going to be examining here this morning is going to be reflective of some of that. So it's kind of interesting we kind of jump right into that one. I'm glad we did. Thank you for that. To understand the self as in the employ of the divine is to allow the will to be utilized in a high way, or perhaps the highest way, to choose unconditional love, are the words I'm using. Paul interrupts this teaching. Well, lots of people believe they are doing God's will and chaos ensues. That is not what we are speaking of. We are not speaking of any other calling than being, presence and being. In other words, who the truth of who you are. You are still in choice here, but the choice is made by alignment. And the choices accrued in this place of being will always teach you what you require and provide what you require, be it a lesson that one must learn or a choice to care for the self in a way that's necessary, which will be met or guaranteed by the reception by you. To put it in the language we're using here this morning is you always have a choice. And when you are in alignment with higher consciousness, your choice is always going to be that of unconditional love. Again, I'm putting my own words here. I think it makes it a little bit, makes it clearer for me.
Yeah.
But I'm not saying that's the truth either. That's the best I can do at this moment. Some of you say to us, I pray all day long, I get nothing. I would first say, well, you're probably not praying all day long, okay? Or you're attached to getting something from it, right? And you're not getting what you think you ought to be getting. So I must be doing something wrong, or God must be doing something wrong.
This is not working.
Not working. What was that, Linda?
Is anybody else upstairs?
I pray all day long, I get nothing. I don't get what I expect.
That's right. That's right.
If I enter prayer or meditation with a sense of kind of define getting what I get or what I need to get or what I think I ought to get. My prayer or my desire is coming from my small self, my lower consciousness. And again, that's not a judgment. That's just pure and simple what's going on. And so when it's coming from my lower consciousness, my lower conscious, by its very nature, is going to be attached to someone or something, to a preconceived notion of what's supposed to be happening here. So I'm praying, or I'm meditating, or I'm doing this, and here's the result. Here's what it looks like should be happening. Again, we're not trying to put that in the category of judgment. We're just saying the choice you are making is one of limitation or lower consciousness. And so don't expect that to pay off the way you think it ought to.
Hey, Jerry?
Yeah.
When you say that, I'm speaking to myself. It's like a pause or a prompt to just open your possibility. Yeah, because, you know, as you said, if I'm praying, And I'm kind of almost in the same outline how this needs to outreach here. Then invariably, you know, more than likely it'll be a disappointment as opposed to let go of the outline and then just be open to the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I'm just kind of working on in terms of just being able to like let it flow.
Willingness and possibility. So let's say I enter into my moment of prayer, my moment of meditation, with no expectation, free from attachment to that. Knowing that whatever is supposed to happen will happen, or is happening already. Yeah, Linda?
For me, what you're describing, and this just personal, I have to remind myself, I don't have the bird's eye view. I'm just looking from where I am in my point of view, and I'm thinking, how could this happen? Or why in the world? You know, we go 2 steps forward and 10 back. Why? And why keep going? And I have to say to myself, I don't have the bird's eye view. I don't see why this needs to happen now or this other.
The eyes with which I'm looking at myself or the world is from my lower consciousness. So I can't see higher consciousness than that. It just doesn't work that way. I keep getting drawn back to this little statement or prayer by Emily Cady, one of the original Unity teachers. God, I don't know the answer, you do, show me. And that's not talking about a God outside there. We're talking about my divine consciousness. You know the answer. I don't. My limited consciousness does not show me. I'm in that place of willingness. I'm in that place of surrender again and again and again. Surrendering my lower consciousness to my higher consciousness.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
I believe this bird's eye view. You know, I'm just wondering, just in terms of like, just in terms of my grew up, it was a very traditional sort of religion, Baptist religion. So the stretch could be is surrendering in here as opposed to up there.
Okay.
You know, because you know, it's God. It's,
yeah, that's an interesting distinction to make. That when I talk about surrender, is it surrendering to something up here or something right here? When I am, and again, this is kind of our old language. When you were talking about surrendering to the divine, it's up here someplace. Right? Here we are talking about surrendering to the divine, but the divine that already lives inside my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And you can almost feel the physical difference there. This or this. The little prince. It is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. A power greater than myself, power greater than my ego. But it's not something outside of the self, capital S, it is part of the self. Some of you say to us, well, I pray all day long, I get nothing. Your expectations of what you should receive must be understood anew. Your idealization of outcome your belief in what you should have, precluding what might be gifted to you. So I'm making a prayer and I'm looking for an answer, and I already have formed in my mind what the answer is going to look like. So I'm looking over here for the answer, but it might be happening over here. How many times have our prayers been answered in ways that we would never even think? Couldn't even possibly comprehend with our limited mind. And again, that's not a judgment, that's just a realization. The five-year-old child wants a car. He watches his parents drive. His feet don't reach the pedals. The child cannot have a car. Terrible things could occur. Instead, the child receives a toy car, enjoys it for a time, and then one day, years later, he or she may drive. You understand yourselves as such. When you strive for a high place spiritually without understanding the level of alteration you must undergo to maintain the high tone, you create confusion. It's the biblical story of the Tower of Babel. You remember that? This group of people, the Babylonians, got together and said, actually what they did, we're going to build a stairway to heaven. And so they decided, what the metaphor is, that somehow or another I can use lower consciousness to be a springboard to get me to higher consciousness. And that just doesn't work, because lower consciousness cannot conceive, neither eye has not seen, nor has ear heard, nor has it entered into the heart of man what God has prepared for those who love him. The lower consciousness cannot conceive what higher consciousness is all about. And so using lower consciousness to try to be a springboard to get the higher consciousness just doesn't work. What does work is when I realize that my lower consciousness, that I've kind of pushed it as far as it can go, then the act of surrender takes place. And surrender takes place of letting go of what the lower consciousness perceives and allowing higher consciousness to take over. I don't know what that's going to look like. I don't know what that's going to appear like. But I know it's going to be different from what my lower consciousness has. When you strive for a high place spiritually without understanding the level of alteration that you must undergo to maintain the high tone, you can create confusion. An example of that. In order to reach a deeper state of higher consciousness, you might have to go through what is sometimes referred to as the dark night of the soul, which means you are being cleansed of your attachments to feelings, to emotions, to lots of different things. But that's a rather painful experience. Like the Velveteen Rabbit, the rabbit said, you know, he wished he could become real without those painful things happening to him, without having his fur loved off or getting loose and flabby in the joints. He'd like to be able to let that have happen without those painful things that go along. And so, actually, Jesus said this, I think it's in the Gospel of John, during the Last Supper process, when he said, where I'm going, you can't follow. He said, oh, where are you going? We can follow. We want to follow you. And he said, you don't know what you're asking for. It's not a judgment. But in order to be able to get to where it is that you truly, really wish to go to or wish to get to, it might be a difficult or a painful experience. It's painful to let go of the ego. it's difficult to let go of the personality as being, because I've spent a lifetime building this damn thing. I've done a pretty good job of it. I got a great personality, or I got this, or I got that. So it doesn't really necessarily feel emotionally, doesn't necessarily feel good or feel wonderful in order to be able to let go of that. It isn't just like snapping my fingers and I think I'll let go of my personality. It's been with me most of my life.
Is that the pain you're talking about, just strictly letting go of your ego and total surrender? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's not a one-shot deal either.
Like layers of an onion peeling off, I guess.
I let go of my ego yesterday. Guess what? Still there. Back again. Oh, there it is again. Well, we support our students in their learning to the level that they may hold the frequency and choose in high ways. We do not rush this process. You can't rush the process. We would rather you keep your feet on the ground with your head in the clouds than be blown by a wind to a level of tone that you cannot manage psychically, emotionally, or physically. What does that mean, he asks? Each text we have given you has supported a level of attunement that may be maintained in manifestation and maintained supports you in accruing the next level of vibrational tone and the awareness that accompanies it. As you progress, the text falls away. We're a perfect example of that. Really interesting, you know, we finished with the first book and the third book in the first trilogy, and then we moved on to the second, third trilogy, actually, right? This one. And you know, what was really interesting was it fit perfectly. It wasn't like we were pushing the river, it wasn't like we were rushing the process. It was the right time and the right place.
Here. Sometimes my intellect wants to run away. I get like spiritual indigestion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to grasp more than find self or whatever. But pressed on the ego, intellect, wanting to get ahead. The next book, next chapter, instead of just stopping. What's there in front of me? Wants to go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that should be.
And that's unfortunate. Well, I wouldn't say unfortunate. That's always going to be true. The ego is always going to be with my personality, right? Is never going to be satisfied with the place that I'm at. It's always going to think I should be further along the line. And I just need to recognize that's not my spirit talking so much as my ego conscience talking, right? And that's just what it does. It's never quite satisfied. It's kind of like King Midas. He was given one wish by the gods, and he said, "Everything I touch turns to gold." He said, "Okay, there you go, you got it." Well, he realized very quickly that he couldn't, anything he touched turned to gold. Couldn't eat the grapes on the table because they turned to gold. I can't eat anything. I can't drink anything. What good has all the gold gotten? There's a difference between the yearning of my higher self for more, or deeper connection to the divine, and my ego consciousness that's looking for more stuff, thinking that in a judgmental kind of way that I should be further along down the line. Hmm. Probably time to do a meditation anyway. So I was going to do a meditation around that. Let me do that. You can put your stuff away for a moment. Close your eyes, take a couple of breaths. Relax, soften. And notice that as you allow yourself to fall into that sacred space, that there is a peacefulness inside of you. It's not grasping for anything. It's simply okay with what is. It might even be reflective of the words or the idea, I am at peace. And allow yourself to listen to that voice. And along with that peacefulness is a gentle yearning for more expansion, for more of a capacity for unconditional love. Doesn't push, doesn't judge. It's simply the realization that I am growing, I am stretching, I am becoming. And I am continuing to become this vessel, this unique vessel of unconditional love. So that never stops. My expansion never stops. My becoming never stops. And that energy is very much different from the grasping, the holding on, the pushing of my ego consciousness that's never satisfied. My spirit yearns and is satisfied at the same time. It's a paradox, but it's true. My soul, my spirit yearns for expansion of its ability to contain unconditional love, and at the same time is perfectly satisfied where it is at this moment. In the spirit world, it can be both. Be at peace with that. Breathe deeply again. Get back in tune with the rhythm of your breathing, the rhythm of your heartbeat. And when you're ready to, you can stretch, take another deep breath, open your eyes. Thank you all for being here. Thank you all for your continued contributions to our work. And I hope that you have a wonderful, wonderful week. And the way a priest friend of mine put it one time, he said, sometimes we pray for the peace of Christ. Other times we pray for the restlessness of Christ. And he said, the way he said it was, may the restlessness of Christ be with you. Thank you all. See ya.
Thank you, Jerry.